The road sign for Desert Springs Nature Preserve says it's half a mile ahead on the right. Most Mondays, there is little to no traffic in the area, but this Monday is an exception. The place is a zoo, and Seth and I haven't even reached the parking lot entrance yet. Multiple TV crews line the main road, each broadcasting live on the situation still unfolding in the woods. As with most reporting these days, it's likely 5% news and 95% speculation and opinion. They'll say and do just about anything to get viewers to tune in. Truth be damned. Vultures. Officer Mike Brex stands in front of his cruiser, blocking most of the entrance to the dirt and gravel parking lot when we pull off the main road. The man's built like a tank, solid muscle from his thick neck down to his massive calves, and he's always ready to engage. Sunlight glints off his freshly shaved head, distorted by plumes of steam rising from his scalp. It's a bitter cold morning, especially for Desert Springs. He dips his head toward us and waves us into the parking lot. The lot stretches a good quarter mile across the front of the preserve, able to accommodate more than 100 vehicles during peak seasons and hours. At present, there are a half dozen police vehicles spread across the lot, including the DSPD CSI van that Charlie drives. Only two other parking spaces are occupied. Two uniformed officers huddle together with Detective Terry Rowland next to one of the patrol cars, close to the main trailhead entrances. A young woman sits on the rear bumper of the car. Bloodshot eyes and trembling hands tell her story. She's the one who must have discovered the body and called it in. Head to toe, the woman's dressed in pink running attire, save an oversized brown jacket draped over her shoulders. Raven locks are pulled tight against her scalp and drawn into a braided ponytail that lies over the front of her right shoulder. A small pink bow hangs from the end of the braid. High cheekbones and a narrow jawline frame her bronze face. A beautiful woman lurks beneath those swollen eyes and tear-stained cheeks. The woman is likely around the same age as me, maybe a year or two older. To be honest, I've yet to master the art of predicting one's age. I blame my 16 years of blindness, but it might just be one of the many things I'm not good at. Detective Rowland rubs his bare arms nonchalantly, clearly the donor of the jacket the woman huddles beneath. Kindness isn't something Terry lacks, especially when a beautiful young woman is involved, unless that woman happens to be me. He glances my direction as Seth and I walk past the four of them. His smile fades, and he says nothing to me, but the contempt in his eyes speaks volumes. Guess I'm still a sore spot. The light reprimand and short suspension I received after closing the case on the Braille killer didn't sit well with Terry. He'd expected me to be fired. In a way, I don't blame him. The information I withheld during those several weeks we hunted the Braille killer was inexcusable, and my actions reprehensible. I've yet to forgive myself for it, if I ever do. It won't be before I locate and bring down the Shadow Priest. I owe Sarah Johnson and Kara Strum that much. More than that. Loose gravel and freshly fallen leaves crunch beneath our boots as Seth and I enter the starting point of Trailhead 4A on the 50-square-mile preserve just northeast of town. The sound echoes in my ears, grates my nerves, conjures images in my mind of cracking bones, prey caught within the constricting grasp of a boa. The thought is fleeting, but the chill it produces latches to my skin and sticks with me as we head toward our destination, toward death. My feet move at twice the pace of Seth's just to keep up with him. He's nowhere near running, but his pace has urgency. Everyone knows the dead never rise and walk away, except in the zombie apocalypse. But convincing Seth of such facts proves fruitless time and again. He's as stubborn as they come, a mule at times. Then again, so am I. Perhaps more so than him.